Welcome to Data with Art, a Party Line Talk Show. I'm your host, Len Stacy, and today I am joined by Gerald Alfred, who's the manager of the governance project for the Office of Chiefs of MCK, and we're going to be talking about a project on a new governance framework. And before we get into that, Gerald, I think you should at least let our listeners know what you've been up to, because it's been so long since I've seen you or heard of you. So let's get up to date and caught up. How have you been?
All right. Well, first of all, really good to be here. Sego, it's kind of go. It's good to be back working in the community again. I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. And yeah, it's good to be back here in Ganawage. I've been working in British Columbia at the university. I was a professor there for 23 years.
23.
2 years
wow.
Before that in at Concordia. Here in Montreal, but I'm like the whole time that I worked over there, I was kind of like bouncing back and forth anyway. I don't know if people would remember the first, some of the older people remember when I first moved out to BC to work at the university. I was still working for MCK
yes.
and the negotiation of the self-government land claims and all that. And I did that right up until about like the early 2000s. And then after that, I took on the lead on a project in Akwesasne. And I did that for 14 years. So I worked with the people who work on the environment in Akwesasne.
Oh.
And, you know, with the Alcoa plant and the General Motors plant and all the pollution and the contamination that was put into the
yeah.
environment, they have a process over there to clean it up, but also to measure the cultural harm that was done to the community. And there's a whole legal process and all that. And so I was hired as the principal investigator of a study.
Ah.
And I did that, and then we negotiated a settlement agreement with General Motors and on behalf of the tribe and the Mohawks Akwesasne there. And then we developed a restoration plan and a whole program for people to do land-based traditional practices and language. And that was done over a period of 4 years, and it ended a couple of years ago. So I was involved in that pretty intensely all the way through. And then when it ended, you know, I kind of moved on to do other work, consulting work in that same field of environmental restoration with other nations in Washington and Idaho.
Wow, and, you've really been busy.
Yeah, I move around a lot.
I was going to say, that was my next comment.
There's a word here in Ganawage for people like that. Right?
I'm not saying.
But no, it's all good. And then I left the university. I had a big fight in the university with administration, and I just felt it was like time for me to leave anyway, because I felt the need to really pour my energy back into the community.
Yeah.
You know, every day that I was in BC that I wasn't here or in Akwesasne, I missed it. And I still do. Every day that I'm away from Ganawage,
yeah.
I miss it. So the chance about, I guess it was in January last year, it's kind of like stars aligned where I was leaving and wanted to do consulting full time. And MCK, as it was described, I saw the segment that was done with Arlene. With Gus and Tanya.
Yes.
So they talked about how the project was conceived and the need for it and stuff. And so, you know, they needed someone to come and run that and to do that work. And I needed to come back and do work in the community. And I wanted to, I should say. And so the stars aligned there. And that's how I came about working in this
community.
Project.
Yeah.
So I'm really, really happy. And, you know, over the last year, we've been working on this project and it's gone through different phases. Like they said, you know, there's a phase one that was mainly internal. Phase two, now we're going out into the community. And so I'm the manager. I kind of designed in conjunction with a working group there in the council, in the OCC, in the Office of Council Chiefs, and the two lead portfolio chiefs. We put our minds together and came up with an approach to address, I think, one of the significant issues that they've identified that they want to address going forward, which is revolving around their own governance of the way that they do their own business.
Yes,
as
yes.
council, as the Council of Chiefs. And so I was pretty excited about being able to make that kind of contribution. So that's what I'm here doing.
I think what's interesting is they had changed the process for the last election in terms of taking the time to work together on, you know, how they give out portfolios, how they give out, like, all of those things, you know, making changes, because I had an opportunity to interview the new people to MCK and the people who were returning to the table. Mm-hmm. And it was definitely different. So I often wondered what was going to be their next step, was to go beyond that, you know, mm-hmm. than just redistributing so it's team, so it's working, you know, and now I know. So I guess in terms of governance, what are some of the topics or some of the things that they're looking at?
In this phase two, what we're looking at is really getting the community's input. So my responsibility in this phase, which is going to run from now right through to, say, about March or April, is really to go out in the community, talk to people, and engage them in a conversation on four issues. And I listed them there for you. And yeah. I hope I don't make a mistake from my own memory, but accountability and transparency is one of them. You know, so as an organization, the Office of the Council of Chiefs is always wanting to, like any organization, feel that sense of legitimacy, that it has the support of the community, and that it's not seen to have any problems in regard to openness, answerability to the community, and all that. And, you know, we all know we're coming from a root in our governance system, that we have a few roots in our governance system, but one of them is the Indian Act.
Yes.
And the imposed system and the bank council system and so forth. So over the last 40-50 years, we've made great strides in the community to take back ownership of that institution and that form of government. But we still have a ways to go. And this is part of it, is to how can we make it more accountable, more answerable, more transparent for people in Ghanawagi to feel like it's more their government.
Yeah, because I think part of the issue is that it's felt within the community. What happens is they've just taken on the role of Indian Affairs. I don't know what other, an Indian Act. Like, that's basically, in a nutshell, what you hear from the general public in the community. So to advance beyond that is a starting point.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And we all grow up with that perspective. And I think anyone who doesn't work or engage in the system, inside that system, believes that. And I would say rightly so, given the history.
Yeah.
But it's been a learning process for myself. And I think anybody who gets involved, either as a council chief, gets elected, or starts to work there, they see that the reality is different, but the perception is really there. And I think I heard Gus mention it, and Tanya, when they were on, that phase three going forward, like next fall, will be a bigger public education engagement on those bigger questions of the root of it. Where are we going? How does it fit in traditional governance and the whole scheme of government? But right now, what we're doing is looking at what are the policies, the rules, the regulations. That's what we mean by governance.
Okay.
You know, sort of like the structure, all the rules and regulations of the Office and Council of Chiefs on how they do their job and how they make decisions, how they relate to the community, how they communicate, and really look at those in depth and give people a chance to look at the actual policy and say, what do you think of this? Do you agree with it? What do you have to say about maybe things that they could do more, better, or things that we're not even thinking of that should be in a policy in regard to how a council chief does her or his business? You know,
and I think that's important, because I think sometimes what happens is that the community sees one picture, the job is something else, yet in reality, they have to advance beyond what was done 25, 30 years ago, according to. Mm-hmm. You know, their responsibility as council or public figures leadership. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you also brought up the issue of traditional government, because that has been a mandate in their hands for I don't know how many years.
Since 1979.
I was going to go into the 70s. I wasn't sure the exact date. But again, that was important because people feel that's the way we should be going and that they should be working with our traditional leadership. So, you know, you hear that often.
Mm-hmm. And you know, when we talked earlier about just a few minutes ago about people's perception of the council and so forth. I mean, I'm a person who's criticized the Indian Act system in my own work for years and years, you know, and I believe there's validity to criticism of what we've inherited.
Right.
And I do have to say that's not something we want to put aside. So this project isn't about telling people that, oh no, the council system is completely legitimate and it's all working perfectly and we want your, no, that's not what it's about. It's about the Office of the Council of Chiefs taking ownership of the fact of the heritage of where it comes from,
yeah,
and saying to the community, we want to advance towards even more of an expression of Mohawk governance so that we can be solid moving forward in the larger vision of a traditional governance. And how does the MCK as an institution relate to that idea?
Yeah.
And so when it was proposed to me and the whole idea was outlined to me as a person who was going to be coming on doing this kind of work, even as a critic of the band council system, I could take this work on because I don't foresee a future, and I don't think that anybody in the community foresees a future where that's just going away.
No.
And it's just going to evaporate. You know, there's, I heard Gus and Tanya talking about it, where everybody in the community acknowledges, whether you're a Longhouse person, whatever, wherever you are on the spectrum, I'm say from yeah, traditional minded to whatever the other end of the spectrum is. Everybody sees a role for a bureaucracy, an institution that manages the funding and does all of the administrative work that needs to be done in this community. And that's really what we're in a long-term vision trying to figure out in terms of what's the appropriate structure and role for MCK. But in this phase here, what we really need to do is tighten up
all the rules and regulations. What they're existing now.
Yeah, and I admire the people who have brought this forward, because as an institution, it takes a lot of guts to say, we got to work on our accountability and transparency. You don't see that a lot, eh? You don't see other institutions turning organizations outside saying, oh, we need to enhance our accountability and transparency because we have these issues and we know there's issues. That's honesty. And so that's why I feel good about taking on this work, because there's an honest or a sincere effort to want to improve, to be better for the people of Gunawangi.
That's a good note. Yeah. On that note, let's take a break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Deda Watarda, Party Line Talk Show. I'm your host, Len Stacy, and I'm joined today by Gerald Alfred, who's the manager of the governance project for the Mohawk Council of Gunawage. And we're talking about a new governance framework. And I guess before going to break, I was curious to know, as someone who was so opposed to the system, how do you bring that into this? Like, how do you bring that experience and your role into this to be able to come up with something that is going to be transparent, that's going to be accountable? And that those are two words that people in the community have been saying for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you do that?
Yeah, for myself personally, I mean, when I come to this kind of work, whether it's here or any other like First Nation that I'm working with, I kind of have to acknowledge the realities that we live in. You know, there's our analysis of history. There's looking at the realities of the oppression of colonialism and so forth, which are all very real. But at the same time, you know, our people are having to get by day by day. And we have to have a practical way of organizing and running our community. And so to have that criticism, to me, doesn't mean that I'm blocking out the reality of the people. And so it means that I have to have that mentality and keep that kind of skepticism about the intentions of the government, keep that skepticism about what the system was designed for, and at the same time come in as a community member and say, well, this is what we got.
Yeah.
And how do I make it better? And how do we keep moving forward? So for me, like the question is always, are we moving further towards that mandate and recognition of that mandate? And I know not everybody in the community has the same passion,
right,
or same belief in it, but it is the mandate of this community to move and to restore traditional government. And so for me, I've always had that in mind as a principle in the work that I do, but I also have a practical mentality. It's different teaching in a university or giving a speech somewhere in the world where you're criticizing colonialism, and that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
But and it doesn't mean that I don't believe that, to come back and say, well, the reality is. And so to come back into the reality and to move it towards that ideal, that's why I do what I do. I mean, you could be a critic from the outside and just stay at that level, or you could have a critical mind in doing the practical work to move the community towards the ideal. And I think that Gunawage is kind of like emblematic of that. We're a pragmatic people.
Yeah.
It's probably why we still survived, you know, all these hundreds of years with this empire, two empires trying to crush us.
Yeah.
If we weren't pragmatic at the same time as idealistic, John Mohawk used to talk about that, you know, about maintaining this kind of like dual mind. You have your ideals, but you also have a pragmatism, and you don't ignore the facts of daily life.
Exactly.
when you do your work.
I guess one of the questions, you talked a little bit about, you referenced what happened at the university. And I guess one of the things, how do you bring that to hear? How do you take that learning and what you experienced and put it into the situation? Because it's, I think, a parallel thing if you think about it.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a really good question. And I don't think that, like, at other points in my career or my own learning, that I could have felt the confidence in doing this kind of work.
Right.
You know, because you have to have kind of lived through the whole idea of building an organization, of embedding that organization in a larger structure, of taking criticism, of making mistakes,
right,
of being held to account, and doing all these kind of things to really understand and appreciate how important those things are. You know, it's important,
yeah,
and it's crucial to have accountability and transparency as the foundations of your legitimacy,
right?
Especially in a political organization.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can get away with as a political organization in kind of doing it a different way, but it always comes back around. And we're in it for the long term here in Kahnawake. You know, this is not anything that's sort of light or going to be kind of affecting other people. This
right.
is affecting our kids,
exactly,
our grandkids, our homes, our land, our heritage. This is the only place in the world that we have as Kahnawake Ro'onu.
Yeah.
And so it's the most serious thing in the world. And so to have been working in all these other
yeah.
First Nations, in BC politics, in national politics, in the university, and doing all this stuff, I think over 30-something years now, I've come to appreciate through lived experience what it is to kind of try to do things right in an Indigenous context. And that's why I think I can come in as kind of like a, someone who's had that, who has a perspective as a Mohawk from Kahnawake,
yeah,
but also from outside and seeing how organizations have made mistakes.
And that's, I guess, pretty much the link that you've experienced it in one organization, and I'm going to use the quote of the word here, toxic masculinity. And I guess as part of that, to bring that into this, it adds a perspective, and it also gives you something else to look at, because
yeah.
it's not just us in the community here. It's outside of here. It's things that First Nations people experience on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting and important point to bring out, because that points to like a whole culture of leadership that has now been challenged and everybody is addressing. You know, the way, if you think about the way, if you want to bring it into, say, Kahnawake context, the way people interacted in the council 40 years ago,
mm-hmm.
The way people interacted everywhere in the street in terms of the way they spoke to each other, the way they treated each other as leaders, and people treated staff and subordinates and all that kind of stuff, and just the way we talk to each other. Things have changed a lot in 40 years.
Yeah.
For the better, for the most part. I'm not going to say everything that's happening today is great and that we have all the answers, but we have some real insights into the way that colonial ways of thinking kind of infiltrated our own organizations in the way that we ran those organizations and the way that we acted as leaders.
Okay.
And so that's the kind of insight that you can bring from having lived through that and having processed that to not a criticism, but a kind of a learning process for where we go forward in this community. What kind of people, what kind of qualities, what kind of interactions, what kind of culture really do we want in our organizations? And it's really a time now to be looking in detail and critiquing every little detail about the way people interact. And so, you know, me 20 years ago, me 10 years ago, me 40 years ago, probably would have had a completely different take on all of this.
Exactly.
and I think that's why it's a good time to be doing this, because we have a whole different set of expectations for leaders, for people doing this kind of work, for people even talking about this, that in the last, especially, it's actually very recent, even in the last 5 years, things have turned over so much. And so to have gone through that process of an organization that was evaluated, to have gone through the learning of that process, yeah, and now to bring that insight, to me, is, it's something that I'm looking forward to be able to make like another kind of contribution into the into the community.
Yeah, and, mm-hmm, and that was why I was asking the question, because I guess to give a framework of this, because you talked about the provincial government, the federal, you have to know a lot of those things in order to help create something that's going to be here. Mm-hmm. And what are the things from a traditional perspective? If you're expecting to go to traditional government, then it should also incorporate those ideologies into this.
Oh, for sure. And that's why, I mean, I'm excited about this phase, but I'm even more excited about phase three.
And when we're going ahead, right?
Yeah, when we start talking about all of those even bigger questions. You know, we had a way of talking about it in the working group. You know, there's small G, medium G, and big G. And so the really small G was around the table, you know, the issues that we needed to resolve there to move forward. So right, the urgent issues. Medium G is what we're talking about here, you know, okay, governance. The big G issues are like, what is Ganawage governance?
Yeah.
Not just MCK, Office of Council Chiefs, but what is Ganawage governance? That's phase three. And that I think gets a lot of people excited. It's a difficult thing. You know, it's going to be a challenge to talk about it in a good way. But it relates to the question you just asked me. You know, to be able to engage in those discussions in a respectful way, in a way that that takes all of the learnings from the past 20, 30 years of working in a university and different organizations, to be able to have a fruitful discussion and to not have it descend into headbutting.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking forward to in phase three.
So we talked about accountability and we talked about the other part. You have three other areas that are being questioned. So let's talk a little bit about those.
Okay. And I'll just list them first of all. I mean, it's good we talked about accountability and transparency first, because that's like the major theme.
And that's usually what you hear all the time. So.
Yeah. But there's other more practical stuff too. So as it's listed in our mandate here, the second one is standards and expectations for professional conduct by Council of Chiefs. So basically a code of conduct, you know, for a person who's acting as a council chief. The third one is the roles and responsibilities of a council chief. So what is it exactly that council chiefs are expected to do? So both in terms of a minimum, like what are they expected to do, but also what's the limitations of their authority? You know, what can they not do?
Because that would address some of the things like people would say, because someone was a chief, and I'm going back to maybe 30, 40 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, and chiefs were put up there and can solve everything, and people would go after hours. I'm going to the one, and I'm going by section. That's how long back I'm going. You know what I mean? You know, and I'm going to go see whoever it was in your section, and people expected results, and people wanted stuff done right away, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of the chiefs through the years have spoke about that. But if you think about it, is that a fair thing? You know, mm-hmm, that people don't have boundaries and people don't have things when it's good to talk to people or not. Mm-hmm. Oh, I got an open door policy, which is nice. But at the end of the day, you have job, you have a responsibility, plus all these other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. And that's one of the things that we're really focusing on, is whether or not there's a consensus in the community on questions like that. Because, you know, I'm sure you know, and everybody else knows, everybody who's elected as a council chief has a different idea on those questions. You know, some of them see themselves as voices of the people, and they're accountable to the people. And they're not wrong.
No.
Some people see themselves more in terms of, well, there's that, but there's also, I'm an employee of the organization. And they're not wrong either. And the reason they're not wrong is because we don't really have any kind of policies and frameworks
right
now to definitively answer that question. And so for many years, that was okay. It worked. But, you know, here's where the foresight comes in. As the organization gets bigger, as the community starts changing, as it develops and gets richer and so forth, there's going to be stresses tugging at that. And so that's why we have to kind of like have a framework so that there's no real space for people to disagree to such an extent where it causes a breakdown. So that's the balance in the work that I'm doing is really to respect the autonomy of the people who are elected. They are elected, and so they have that mandate from the people, but also they are members of an organization. And so coming into this project here, it's really kind of an artful balance,
yeah.
You know, and it's one that's on the table. It's like we know we need to balance that. So how can we set up a structure that makes it easy for people to work together, that minimizes the opportunities for conflict, that gives the public the confidence that their representatives are doing their job and earning their pay and all that kind of stuff, but yet also respects the right of an elected person to do the job as a political person that they, in the way they want to do it. And so it's an interesting challenge to,
yeah,
be able to design policy to reflect that. And so far, so good. You know, I have to say,
okay,
you know, it's not gone as fast as we might have thought, but that's something we should have anticipated too, because this is important stuff and everybody wants to have their say, and we got to do it right. We got to be careful, and we're moving very carefully on all of this stuff. And with that, I'll say as well, like each one of these major issues, by the way, there's one that I didn't list. It's the last one, leadership selection and the election process,
right?
And the criteria for a council chief. And this has to do with the election law. And so that brings in a point I was just going to make, is that for each of these four major themes, there is a policy, either actual policy that's been passed by the chiefs, or it's in draft form. And so when we do these consultations, we're talking to people, it's not just like an abstract discussion. We'll have those big discussion, people can say whatever, right, they want to say, but we're also going to be looking for people to look at these policies and say, okay, here's the policy that addresses this. Is it good enough? And what do you think about that? And we'll walk people through it. But you know, we want it to touch ground too. We don't,
yeah,
want it to just be out there as a, you know, in the air discussion. We want it to be in where the rubber hits the road, so to speak, too. And I should say, we didn't mention her yet, but the project assistant who's done a lot of the groundwork on this and who'll be working with me on it is Jessica Lazar. She's not here today because she's not feeling well, but she's my partner in this in terms of going forward and doing this phase of the work.
Right. So I guess what's going to happen is you're going to be, how are you going to be getting the community involved in participating in these four areas? Like what are some of the strategies that will be implemented?
The main strategy that we decided to use, because of its success in creating, I'd say, a dialogue that's real, is called a kitchen table consultations. And it's a method that was developed by indigenous people who were consulting on governance initiatives and who wanted to move away from the idea of consultations in the standard practice of a survey, phone consultations, focus groups, all that stuff. Those kind of things are good for certain purposes, and I think that they work when a government or an organization has something they want to run by the people, like they have already developed, you know. So you have a plan, you have a project, and you want to support. And so you go out and you get a survey and you say, okay, we got 60%, 70% support. That's good. You want to do a focus group to validate ideas that you have. Great. But for two reasons, I don't think that works here. One, we want it to be more open. We want it to be more open-ended, I should say.
Okay.
And then secondly, I think people are tired of those other means. And tired only in the sense like physically tired.
Yeah.
Not like writing them off.
Right.
That they're not useful. But it's we're a smallish community, and it tends to be the same people who get consulted all the time, and people are busy with their work and so forth. And so, you know, to have to take the time to do that kind of stuff, it's just not worth it sometimes. I know I'm one of those people who gets asked to do that all the time, and I just have trouble putting my passion into it. Whereas this one, the approach that we're going to take, and hopefully it works better, you know, this is just starting out, is for us to come into people's homes and workplaces. So to not ask them to come to us, to say, you know, let's get in contact with, say, one person in a family. If you can bring together 5, 10, 15 people in your family on an evening or a lunch break or at any time, we'll come to you. we'll bring food, we'll bring drinks and coffee and tea and all that, and then we'll come, we'll set up. You can be comfortable in your own space, in the dynamics that you are comfortable with in your own family, and then we'll put these things on the table and we'll listen to you. And so our principles are making people comfortable and active listening and note taking. So okay. We're not going to be asking people to check off boxes
right.
or anything like that. We want to put these issues, these four kind of issues that I laid out, and let this family dynamic take its course and have us really listen to what people say. And I think that gives a more like a authentic perspective.
Okay.
That's just my feeling, you know, working in other areas, but also I think knowing Ganawage too, I think it gives a more authentic perspective when people are freer to talk. When you're with your sisters and brothers, your aunties and your grandma and so forth, it's going to be a different conversation than coming into the council office and sitting there with five professionals giving your opinion.
On that note, let's take a break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Dede Watarda, Party Line Talk Show. I'm your host, Lance Stacy, and today I'm joined by Gerald Alfred, and we're talking about the new governance framework for the chiefs of the Mohawk Council of Ganawage. And before going to break, we were talking a little bit about this kitchen table type discussion, which I think is great. When is that going to start? How will people be contacted? Let's talk about the logistical mm-hmm. part of it.
All right. Well, we're starting this week. This is the first week. And the first thing that we've done is set up a community advisory group. And we have three people that have been contacted and who have generously agreed to, you know, give us their time and energy to help guide us in this and to kind of be the oversight for what I'm doing, to give me advice and to make sure that I'm doing it right from their perspective, and to vet everything that's done in terms of what I produce and the conclusions that I come to, and all that will be run. And Dewa White, Linda DeLormier, and Kalia Markwe have agreed so far to do it. But the reason I mentioned that in terms of time frame is because we're just starting. And there's still opportunities for people who might be interested in this, who want to get involved, to be on the advisory group as well. So if anybody's listening or anybody knows anybody that's interested in getting involved in this kind of work, it's not going to be work intensive in terms of time, maybe once a month, maybe emails whenever I have a question or whenever an issue comes up. You know, one issue that already came up was who can participate.
Right.
You know, because in our organization, besides families, we're doing workplace. And in some of the workplaces, there's non-Indigenous people.
Yeah.
Or there's Ongwehungwe from other communities. And so right away, you know, we had to have a little discussion about that. And just so people know, the resolution of that, because of the nature of the project, is that it is for community members, for Ganawage Rono only. So little things like that, you know. And then towards the end of the project, the community advisory group will be looking over everything I produce before I give it over to the council as a statement of conclusions. They'll be looking it over. So
okay.
It's for people who are interested in governance issues in Ganawage, it's a good opportunity to get involved. So feel free to contact me or Jessica if anybody's interested. My direct line, it's my cell phone, is 250. It's a BC number, 250-532-0492. If you don't want to call BC, you could call the council and just leave a message for me. And Jessica's direct line is 514-805-7615. My email for this project and my work is gerald.alfred@mck.ca. And Jessica's is jessica.lazar@mck.ca. So this week, we actually have one workplace session set up and one family group meeting set up.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, so we're pretty happy about that. It's kind of like a pilot this week. We'll really get rolling in January and February. But we have the education center staff, and we have one family who's agreed to do it on Friday evening.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and so we're open right now. I've been sending out emails to different workplaces and and different family groups through individuals that I know. And this opportunity here, Luann, thank you, is an opportunity to reach out to more people. And so I know it's a busy time this week and it's short notice and all that, but if someone's sitting there listening and says, I just have to have my input right away on this and I have time and I want to do it and I can get 5 to 10 people together, feel free to get in touch with me, because I have Thursday evening, Friday during the day, Saturday, you know, so.
So it doesn't matter weekend, evening, whatever people are available.
No, like my work on this project is based on the need to do that. I'm not in the office. You know, I'm out and around doing this kind of work, and I'm available just based on schedule, as long as I don't have a conflict with something else going on.
Right.
We're anticipating that it's probably with family group meetings going to be after work or in the evenings for the most part, or on a Saturday afternoon or something like that.
Right.
So I'm here, and I'm actually here until the 27th right now for this session, and I'm open. Okay. You know, so feel free to get in touch. And realize, having said that, though, realizing that we do have holiday season on us and it's short notice. So I'll just say that there's two other time frames that we've set aside for the whole week, January 13th. So the week of January 13th and the week of February 17th.
Okay.
So far we have those 2 weeks set already, and we're booking people then. So if anybody's interested, they're wide open. And then if need be, we'll have another session in March.
Okay.
And we're looking at a goal of 20 family groups and probably 6 workplace groups.
Oh, yeah. That's not too bad.
Not too bad. But if you have 20 families and there's 10 people, that's 200 people that you're engaging. And workplace groups, you know, could be anywhere from 5 to 10 too. So you're looking at another 60 people. So it's a pretty good sampling. And this is not meant to be quantitative survey or anything like that.
I'm glad you said that, because that was my next question.
So all of this is really to inform the work that I'm doing in helping the council think through this and to develop new policy. You know, so it's not the methodology isn't quantitative in terms of having to validate what we're doing, but with numbers, it's qualitative. And so it's for me to be able to give good advice to the Office of the Council of Chiefs on how to reform their governance. That's basically what it comes down to. And so the first choice really was in selecting me as kind of an insider outsider with the kind of experiences that we talked about earlier. Yeah. So, I mean, I started working at the council in 1987. Yes.
Wow.
1987.
Oh my. That's quite a while ago.
Yeah. So that's how many years of experience with breaks working in with this organization on different issues. And so, you know, that's a bit of an insider knowledge. And then also outsider, because I have at various points in my career been critical and left and not had a relationship with the council and so forth. And I have my whole other work that I do. So it's kind of an insider outsider. And I think that was the first like methodological choice that was made.
Yeah.
And the second one is to do it this way, which is to take the quality of the input as opposed to quantity. And also, though, to balance that and not seem exclusionary and not be exclusionary at all, and keep an advisor group open and open to anybody in the community, even if it's an individual. I've been talking about family groups and workplace groups.
Yeah, I was going to ask that question.
I know, recognizing that some people don't have that, you know, and some people might just want to come as a single person, an individual, or a couple of people, or maybe you have 2 or 3 friends, you want to come and do it. That's totally fine too. And I'm here for the times that I mentioned. Jessica's here all the time.
Right.
And so there's a lot of flexibility. We don't want to exclude anybody. Anybody who's gone Huagaronu who wants to have input into this can do it. We'll find a way.
So now you have another event that you're hosting, in case listeners are hearing us talk today and have questions and want to do a face-to-face. What's your next project?
Right. Thanks for reminding me.
I knew you didn't remember.
I did not remember until, as you were saying, I was like, what is she talking about? Okay, it's tomorrow, right? You're talking
about.
Yes. Okay, so tomorrow we're doing the kiosk. Jessica and I are doing the kiosk at the bank in the lobby and at KCS. And so we're really looking forward to that too. So Jessica's put some really good work into a board that explains what we're doing, and we'll have handouts and we'll be sitting there all day So the whole work day, 9 to 4 or whatever it's going to be.
Yeah.
And we'll just be there. And if people want to come and ask questions and get more information.
Book appointments, right?
Yeah, book appointments. We'll be sitting there physically. If you'd rather do it than that way than email or phoning or anything. It's always good to talk to people anyway. So I look forward to that. So we'll be there tomorrow.
And I think what's good about that is people can ask openly different questions that sometimes you can't, or someone, you're speaking with someone else overhears it. Next thing you know, you got a little crowd that hangs out in there, you know,
yeah.
And people want to know. And I think that when you talk about transparency, that's a lot of the stuff that you don't get that chance to ask questions. You don't get that chance to have insights. You don't get that chance. And having these kinds of kiosks allows that dialogue to start.
Oh, yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. And just on that note, just to say, I haven't talked about, you know, any of the issues about consent or ethics or anything like that. But just to be clear, so people know going forward, it's completely up to the people in the community as to how this information is used. You know, if people don't want their name affiliated, they don't want it recorded, they don't want to be pictures or anything like that, that's fine. If a family says, well, I really do for the record.
Yeah.
I want a video and audio and I want everything. Fine, we'll do that too. So we're just completely open, right? But the only thing is that myself and Jessica will be either watching, taking notes, listening, and taking all that input into the work that we do to produce a document that's going to inform the council's decision-making going forward. But
level it's not going to like list names or anything. This is going to be overall, this was the feedback that on this question, these are some of the things we got, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Unless people want their
names. Want their names. Yeah. Okay. Because mm-hmm. I think that's important to clarify, because some people don't like their names and other people have no problem saying their name.
it's a whole method that we have, you know, where and that's another thing that the advisor group is going to be looking over too, which is to confidentiality.
Yes, because I was going to ask that
so
question.
There's a trust involved in the people doing the work. So for myself, basically to take the feedback and to protect the confidentiality of those that don't want their name associated with it. And that will happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also think another piece to this in terms of the confidentiality is that then people can be more honest and open about what they have to say. And it's not personal. Mm-hmm. And I think that needs to get clarified sometimes, because when people are doing things, they like to personalize things. This mm-hmm. is about a system, about a framework, not about the individuals.
Oh, yeah. People can go off as much as they want in the sessions and with the confidence that, you know, they're not going to be implicated in any kind of retribution or anything like that, because the work that I'm doing is the filter between what their statements are and what the useful feedback and input is for the Council of Chiefs to make the changes they need to make. And if people want to make the emphatic point, like I said this and I want that,
right,
that'll make its way through to the document. If people want it to be much more general and have the point made but not have their name associated with it, then that's the way it'll be done.
Yeah, because I think though sometimes when you're looking at research, a lot of people aren't aware of processes that take place and, you know, how direct will it get back to the table? What would be the kind of stuff? And I guess you want people to be honest, but also to be critical in a good way, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. With good ideas or feedback. And, you know, that's kind of the purpose of this.
It's about creating that space where there's confidence. And that's what we use it here. So it's people's comfort zone.
Yeah.
That's why we're doing it this way. Usually their house with their own family is their comfort zone. And so that's why we're going there with a set of tools that hopefully are going to maintain that comfort zone,
right,
and that people can feel free to say what they need to say.
So I'm back to this. If it goes well, you're going to go into March, but is that the time frame? And then how does this feed into the next phase? Mm-hmm. Maybe you can explain that for our listeners in less than 2 minutes.
Yeah, so the time frame on this phase two, the public engagement, is up until March. Which is when we're taking in feedback. And then of course, comes the work of putting it in order, analyzing it, and me writing up a report that's going to be presented to the council as the findings of all of this. And so that'll take some time, you know, probably through the spring. And then in the summer, as the schedule goes, we'll be developing an accountability framework based on that.
Okay.
So I'll put that in front of the council. They'll take it. They'll analyze it. Then we'll continue with the work of the project, which is me engaging with them on how do we take the feedback from the community and make it something real in terms of the policies that the Office of Council Chiefs is going to go forward with. And as far as phase two, the end of phase two, the deliverable for me is in August, the end of August, which is a governance manual for the Council of Chief, which is, so say somebody gets elected next time, they come in, boom, there's a manual that tells them what their job is and all of these rules and regulations, but also a vision of an accountability framework for the Office of the Council of Chiefs. So these kind of dual deliverables. One is a very practical manual for chiefs, and the other one is this new framework of policy on how the Council of Chiefs is going to respond to this public engagement.
Okay. So we have about a minute left. So maybe we can just remind people your contact information, who your assistant is on this project, so if people have more questions.
All right. So I'm working on this project as a manager. And again, my email is gerald.alford@mck.ca. And my cell phone is 250-532-0492, and feel free to call anytime to make an appointment or just ask questions about this. You can also call the Mohawk Council at their office and ask for me there if you don't want to, if you don't have long distance and call a number in BC. There's also Jessica Lazar, who's the project assistant, and her email is jessica.lazar@mck.ca, and her cell phone here in Kahnawake is 514-805-7615.
Thank you so much for joining me today. Very informative. I'm sure I'll have you back on in the show in the new year. Coming up tomorrow is a special day. It's the KOR, Gunyagahaga Ungawana Rotochakwa's actually Christmas show with Zuse McGregor and Leo Dibel, starting from 9 to 1 here on K1037. Up next with the 1 o'clock news is Kathleen Speckard. Have a great afternoon, everybody. Onagiwahi.